We are interviewing Mr. E. L. Huffman, who presently lives in Ashby Heights in Harrisonburg. Mr. Huffman, you say you own some land up in the park?
We own 1,400 acres of land. It was known as a Big False Run.
Big False Run. Where exactly was
that?
It
was located about 4 miles west of, east of Shandor, Virginia.
All right, so you owned all this land. What did you do with the land?
We grazed cattle on it.
You grazed cattle.
Mm-hmm.
Were there many trees on the land?
It was an unlimited number of chestnut trees on it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They were dead by then, right?
If what?
They were dead at that time?
No. They were alive.
They were alive.
I was born in 1909.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I have to drive the cattle backwards and forwards to the mountain.
Uh-huh.
And my job as a small boy, you know,
yeah,
was to stop them from going in lanes and roads on the way to the mountain, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we didn't have no lanes or nothing, my brother would catch me by the arm, pull me up on the horse behind him, you know,
mm-hmm,
until we come to another place.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about 8 miles. We had to drive them.
Right. Now, you drove them up from the valley up to...
From the valley up into the mountain.
Now, was this area of yours near Big Meadows, or where was it?
Yes, it was between Shandor and Steinle, Virginia.
Oh, yeah, uh-huh, right.
And it was 1,400 acres of it.
Great.
And
the park took that over?
It took all but 155 acres, and the reason why they didn't take that, it extended down like the state of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a straight line.
Yes, right.
So we still own that.
Uh-huh, right.
And on that is an unlimited amount of chestnut trees, dead or were dead.
Sure, right.
And we sold Locust Post off of it up until my mother died.
Uh-huh.
They gathered quite a few Locust Posts, and she made as much money off of the Locust Post as she did paid for the place.
Is that right?
And my job was... in the fall, we'd always wait until after a frost, a hard frost, you know, so we could get the chestnuts.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go to get the cattle in the fall, and the boys had made a rake, and one side of it you could rake with, and the other side you could shovel with.
Oh.
And my job was to rake the leaves off and rake these chestnuts up while they repaired the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And they just opened the gates up to it, and the cattle would go home. They knew they was going home. You never had to watch them going home.
Really?
They would just take right off home. Never had to guide them at all going home.
Right.
And we would get bags upon bags upon bags upon bags of chestnuts.
What did you do with the chestnuts?
Well, we sold them to the local stores. And
how much would you get for those?
I was just trying to think what we did get, but I believe it was 3 cents a pint. Average, yeah, 3 cents a pint.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be around about, I'd say around about $1.00 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was a fuller that operated a store by the name of Leo Jett, and he was on the road home, and the boys would always put these in bags, and instead of tying one bag together, they tie two so that they hang down across the horse, you know.
Oh, yes.
See? And they would fill these bags full, and the ones that they sold to stores, they would pick up clean, you know.
Right.
But the others, they would pick up leaves or whatever raked up with them, because my daddy used the leaves for in his chicken nest.
Oh, sure. Right.
And we would bring them home, and I can remember well when he would hold them until it was a hard wind. And he would pick them up and just let them fall, and the leaves would blow out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother used to have a basement, a good-sized basement, and she spread them out on the ground in the basement.
Yes.
And we had chestnuts all the year around, even into the spring. They would sprout even in there.
Mm.
And she'd make lard tanks full of cookies out of them.
Yes, right.
Grind them up and make lard tanks out of them.
This store that you mentioned, was that a mountain store?
It was right there at the mountain, yes.
Did the people from the mountains come down to
that
store?
Yeah. This store was, a lot of mountain people come to this store because they bought huckleberries, blackberries, all of that kind of stuff, you know, this store did. and they had New York people and Baltimore people that bought that stuff. Eggs, all that kind of stuff, you know, they bought.
Where was the store located?
It was located just about 3 miles, 2 miles south of the Alma Bridge.
Okay, all right.
And it was called Leo Jet.
Uh-huh. Leo Jet.
Jet.
J-E-T-T.
Mm-hmm. He bought dried apple snits, all that kind of stuff. My family sold lots of dried apple snits because my father owned the largest orchard of anybody around. My grandfather made government liquor. He had a regular distillery, and it was 4 large tanks where my father furnished him a peach for the peach brandy and apples for the apple brandy. And my job, mine and my brother's job, was to stir this ever so often like you would apple butter.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And we'd go, and I was just a small boy. It was up on a platform about, I'll say, 6 inches of tubs were, so that they could get a container under it to draw it off, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And my job was to get up on there and then get up on a block. And this stir was made, all four of them was hooked together. And when you stirred one, it worked them all.
Oh, great. That was clever.
Uh-huh. You didn't have to go from barrel to barrel.
Speaking of that, did you know of any of the mountain people who made any moonshine?
I knew them all.
You did?
In other words, I was the only person that could weld copper.
Yeah.
And I had a torch that I could weld copper in those days. And you know, if you put it over a fire, well, solder would melt off.
Sure.
And they'd always call it apple butter kettles. Never was known as a still.
No.
I didn't know it as a still.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I made a many and a many and a many one.
Yeah. Where did they get the copper from, do you suppose?
They had outlets from these people who were building dams. At that day and time, they were putting copper between the sections of the dam to keep, you know, it wouldn't rust, so the water wouldn't seep through.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And they had outlets, some of the guys had done the purchasing for the people who were building the dam.
Right.
Well, they knew the different people, and they could buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mostly where they got it. And their sugar, they had the same way.
Mm-hmm.
They knew people that they could buy a ton of sugar from just as easy as they could a pound.
Sure.
And I've seen a many a gallon run.
Yeah. They made good whiskey.
There was no stuff about it. They made good whiskey.
Yeah, right.
But I remember well when they made it long before the prohibition.
Yeah.
And
did you have much contact with the mountain people?
I had more contact with the mountain people than any other man that I know of.
Okay, start telling me.
I don't know of any other man that would have had more contact with them.
You know, one of the best ways to know the mountain people is somebody as an outsider like you. Because you weren't one of them. You could look at them objectively. Okay, what were they like?
There was no finer people that ever lived than what the mountain people were. I've been in nearly every hollow from Waynesboro to Front Royal. Now that's taking in a lot of territory. But the reason for this is because I had a welding torch and they had to use these hillside plows. You plowed one way with it and then you flopped it over and you plowed back. Otherwise you'd have to run around.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to weld those plows. And that's the reason that I was called to so many places in the mountain, was to weld this equipment for them.
Then, in other words, I had not heard of this plow that you were telling about. Now, was it one that they had sort of conceived themselves?
No, this was a factory-made plow. If I'm not mistaken, it was made by P. Bradley Company.
Mm-hmm.
But you could plow along the hillside, and then when you got to the other end, you just switched it over. And you come back and it had a double mow board.
Oh.
And it would throw the dirt the same way, you know.
Sure.
Otherwise, you'd have to go all the way around a piece of land.
Right.
And they was a good plow, but they had one piece that would break if it hit something solid.
Yeah.
And I could weld cast iron, and nobody else that I knew of could weld it. It was just a little slight to weld it.
Yeah.
And They have called me numbers and numbers and numbers of times to come and weld different things, axles and pieces for their wagon.
How would you get there?
Either horseback, bicycle, or walk.
Uh-huh.
And sled. I have went on a flat sled.
Yeah.
With all rotten stuff out with.
We know very little about the southern section, yet you say you've been in every one of those.
I wouldn't say every one, but I'll say best part of all of them.
The people in there, would you say their customs were sort of like those in the central?
No. The people's custom is exactly like chestnut trees. They're not just one kind of native chestnut tree.
Right.
They're 8 different kinds.
Uh-huh.
And they all have the same nuts and the same leaves and the same bark.
Yeah.
But they're all different.
Right.
Now, if you go to West Virginia, you've got a different kind of chestnut tree from native chestnut from what you got over here. If you go south, in the Shenandoah Mountain, you got a different one. If you go north, you got a different one. And the people was the same way.
In what way were their customs different?
Well, the way that I figured they was different, they had different employees. One would saw lumber and haul out, and the others would work for them. The others furnished produce, and they would work for them. And that made a change in people, see?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In the different sections.
Did they, in the southern section, I know that there was bacon and smoke holler.
Yeah.
And there they made a lot of moonshine.
Very holler, very town, all the places.
Were there many feuds or battles or fights among them? Did they get a little more boisterous than most of
them? The only time that I would ever see, I remember, a fight anywhere close to the mountain is when some outsider would come in. And they would get a little smart with them, or maybe buy some of their liquor and get about half drunk or something like that.
I see. Did they have the utter, I shouldn't say it this way, but if a Negro came into the central section, he was driven out?
No. At one time they were. Now, I can remember back when a place called Ingham.
Ingham?
Ingham.
I-N-G-H-A-M. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They allow no niggers through there.
Yeah.
They pull them off a train or anything. Mm-hmm. And my daddy was called numbers of times when there was trouble with the niggers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if he didn't go, well, they did damage to your farm some way or another or something, you know. Maybe kill a cow for you or something like that.
Yeah.
But the Hilliards was the head people of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, what were the main names that were down there? There were Frasers.
There was Frasers, Hilliards, Lambs, Comers.
Comers.
Comers, C-O-M-E-R.
Yeah.
And, I know many. DuBosch.
Oh, DuBosch.
Yeah. Oh, I knew him personally. I knew him from a day he come here. He was a reverend, you know.
Yes, I know Reverend DuBosch.
Did you?
Oh, sure. I've interviewed him.
Did you?
right.
I knew him from a day he come in here.
Did they, the people in the southern section, was their family tie very close?
Yes. The southern people, they visit, well, all the mountain people visit one another.
Yeah.
If they needed a little lard, or they needed a little sugar, they got it and they replaced it.
Right.
They didn't do like the people around out here. They really replaced it.
Yeah.
And they always carried all their money on them. I never did know one of them have a bank account. I never took a check off of one that I know of.
Uh-huh.
And they would come in with, they had money. They had thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. They wasn't paupers.
Mm-hmm.
Because they sold cabbage. It was no expense to them. They raised everything that they eat,
right,
except sugar and coffee or something like that. And they would never, very seldom you ever got coffee there. You know what you got? You got sassafras tea and stuff like that.
Sure.
Right. I've seen them make it a many a time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people I've heard made it out of the bark, but they made out of the roots. They take the roots,
yes,
up and dry them,
mm-hmm,
and they take the bark off and made it. That was their main drink.
Right.
And As far as their money it was concerned, I've had numbers of the mountain people that wanted me to take their money and keep it for them for their burying expenses, you know. I wouldn't do it because you never know what can happen, see.
Sure.
But I had numbers of them that did. They had confidence enough in me to take it and keep it for them.
Mm.
I've seen them come out of many a time that they would have these old big dollar bills and gold backs and a lot of gold. They was bad about gold. They loved their gold. I'll say that most of the head people, like the ones that sold lumber, the ones that sold bark to the tannery and different things like that, they mostly had got in gold.
Mm-hmm.
It was no trouble to get gold at that day and time.
Were the men very protective of their wives?
Was it what now?
Protective of their wives.
Yes, they was a very few men that really stepped out on their wives. They mostly was a close family bunch.
Yeah.
But now the ones that mostly went with women was different men that had business out.
Mm-hmm.
Not the local people.
Yeah, right.
I don't believe it. I ever heard, I might have, but I don't believe if I've ever heard of a fight at a house caused from it.
Yeah, right. Were the children obedient?
Yes. They was, some children, very shy. They would peep around the house at me when I'd go in, you know, and finally they would get to where they would know me, you know, and just as friendly, come jump up on my lap and talk to them and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the small ones, you know.
Right. Were their homes, were they solid homes, or did snow come into them occasionally, or what?
They were some right nice homes. But mostly all of them was just two-room home, a main bedroom and a kitchen and place to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And they most all had fireplaces in them.
Yeah, right.
I never will forget one time when I was in there on business. I was doing a welding job at the time, and my car broke down. I had an old Chevrolet Baby Grand.
Oh, yeah.
About a 1915 or 16 model.
Uh-huh.
And, it twisted the axle off, and I had to stay all night in there that night, but I had stayed all night before.
Mm-hmm.
And in this room was a man, his wife, and it was four or five children, and myself, and my helper. And we all had to sleep right in front of the fireplace, and it was cold that night too, don't you think?
Sure.
It was?
Yeah.
It was cold. But they had no other place for us to sleep but right in there.
Mm-hmm.
And just numbers and numbers of times that I would be in there, they would beg me to stay all night with them or stuff like that, you know. And if I had plenty of time to get out, I didn't bother about staying all night.
Sure. How about their meals? What would you have when you stayed there?
Oh, did you know they was right smart on hominy?
Oh. Uh-huh.
Yes, corn hominy.
Uh-huh.
That was that and gravy was two main meals that they had.
Yeah.
Of course, they'd have eggs. They'd have ham meat.
Mm-hmm.
But I never did like their ham meat very good because it tastes too much like mash. They fed their hogs off of the mash, you know, where they made the whiskey.
Oh, yeah.
And it had a kind of musty taste to it.
Of course, yeah, it would.
And, but I've eat most anything that grows in there.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite of all the mountain was a mallum apple. Every house had trees of mallum apples.
Right.
Did you ever see any?
I have two on my property.
Save me a couple. I want to get a start of.
All right.
I want to plant some seed and get a start.
Okay. I'll be very happy to.
But I knew where just numbers of the trees were, and in the wintertime, in the fall, well, I'd go there. And then they had a peach tree. They would call it the fall peach.
Uh-huh.
It got right along in September, October, you know.
Yeah.
Late.
Uh-huh.
And I've gathered a lot of them. But my main thing was in there was chestnuts.
Yeah.
And the trees, checking the trees.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to start a little story with you on how I started with the chestnut tree.
Okay.
My father owned this here apple orchard, and he had peach orchard in it. He had plums, he had cherries, he had kerns. You know what kerns are?
Mm-hmm.
Quinces.
Mm-hmm.
All of that kind of stuff in his orchard. He furnished my grandfather the fruit for his distillery. And on Sunday, my father was one of the leading farmers. And on Sunday, there would be a large crowd of people every Sunday. And I hated it because they set the table, and what we eat was the old lower part of a chicken leg and cold chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And after the dinner was over, they would take these, he would take this crowd to the orchard, and he'd show them these spots on them that it had occurred after the chestnuts died. And he said, if something ain't done about these here, he said, in 100 years, life will be gone. He said, because the trees puts out hydrogen, oxygen, and all that kind of stuff. And the trees are badly dying today. You can go anywhere you want to. And it's got so you can't raise no fruit trees now without treating them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what caused me to start work with them. Mm-hmm. And I've went many a time before the Skyline Drive was put in to some big chestnut trees that I knew close to where we was at, and they would be all dead but one limb. Well, I learned from that that a tree was fed by individual sapling. If it wasn't, the whole tree would have died.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote all that down, and I've kept a diary all through life. I have a diary that it's amazing to just look at it.
Mm-hmm.
There's people that have known me for years and years and years has never known nothing about it.
Mm.
But I kept trying everything on these chestnut trees. I'll never forget, my main chestnut tree was on top of a mountain, right on the tip top of First Mountain. And it was a nice one, and you could get all you could carry. Of course, I'd be on my bicycle, you know, we just throw them across the bicycle and all. Mm. But the main thing made the interest to me on the chestnut trees was a blacksmith that had a blacksmith across the road from where I was at,
mm-hmm.
probably 50 yards.
Yeah.
And we used to get his chestnut logs for to make his different things out of. He made rims for wheels. He made the hub for wheels. He made all kinds of handles out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he made us a cart and put two buggy wheels on it.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother and I used to go to the mountain. It was about 4 miles to the mountain. And we'd cut, he'd give us an order for what he wanted, you know. And we would cut these logs as long as he wanted and put on what we thought we could haul.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a couple of hills between the mountain and his shop that we couldn't get up, and we'd unload part of it and take it up, and then go back and get the other part and bring it up, and then we'd load it all on.
Yeah.
And when we got into the shop, we would generally make about 3 loads a day. And boy, we got a quarter for 3 loads, and I thought that was something.
Yeah. Well, then the mountain people must have got about that amount of money, too, for all the logging they did.
Their cabbage, they sold cabbage heads as big as you'd ever see them for 3 cents.
Oh.
They sold potatoes for 50 cents a bushel all in the world that you wanted. I'll tell you another little story about the potatoes. My mother bought them for her. She run a boarding house. She had 23 boarders.
Mm-hmm.
And she bought this stuff, and so a man brought out some potatoes we'd been buying off of them year after year, you know. And he brought them out in a burlap bag, and I said to him, I said, Mr. Meadows, you got a bushel in that bag? He said, you got a bushel basket? I said, yeah. He said, get it. So I got it, and he put every one that he could have on it, and it was about 4 that he couldn't get on it. He threw them back up in his car. I said, didn't mind. He said, no, you got your bushel.
Never doubt him again.
No more. But he was our main supply from my mother's boarding house.
Uh-huh.
For the reason was that he was kind of the overseer of the other mountain people, and he knew where to get this stuff.
I see. Now, did he live in Naked Creek area?
He lived about 2 miles from Dubosh.
Yeah. In the Naked Creek area.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which Meadows was he?
He had 4 or 5 brothers that all lived around up in there.
Yeah. There are a lot of Meadows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was one of the finest men that I ever met in my life.
In what way?
Any way you wanted to. He was 100% honest. Mm-hmm. You didn't. That's one thing about those mountain people. I never had one to beat me out of a dollar of all the time that I ever dealt with them. If they said they was going to pay me on Saturday, they paid you on Saturday. If they had to walk, to pay you. Now, another reason, I had a nice, great, big bench in my garage. And they would gather around there in the wintertime to see what was, talk and different things like that.
Yeah.
And this was a front entrance here on it, this front entrance.
Yeah.
And I had the different things here, you know. And I had a nice, great, big, long bench right along here. And they would gather there, and I inspected automobiles for the state of Virginia, and they, you know, that drawed a lot of them.
Sure.
That drawed lots that I wouldn't have gotten no other way.
Mm-hmm.
And they would get in there talking, and nearly every one of them would have a bottle with them. And they'd say to me, have a drink out of my bottle. And you couldn't turn them down.
No.
And I prayed up to my boy just make like I was drinking away and wouldn't put my tongue over it, so I wouldn't drink none.
Mm-hmm.
But to be sociable with them, that's the way I did, because I never did care nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
I've drank a little bit of it, but I never did care a thing in the world about it. But if you didn't drink with them, some of them would say, well, you didn't drink none. I'd say, oh, I drank enough.
Uh-huh.
And I always tried to get the ones that had already been a drinking first, you know, and then they couldn't tell much what I drank.
Yeah.
But they was very sociable, and they was nice to talk with. We would get the subject up about chestnut trees, you know. They would talk a whole lot, and I would had a mind eye, you know, and I'd keep all of that in my mind. And my testing and all, it worked out just exactly what they would say.
Yeah.
Now, it was one man up in there that had, by the name of Luther Kite.
Yeah.
He was the best known chestnut man in the mountain, but he'd tell nobody nothing. But he'd come out to my garage to get his car inspected, you know, and while the boys was looking around over it, I'd sit on the bench and, you know, we'd bring up a subject, and every once in a while I'd bounce in on the chestnuts, you know, and he'd let out a little bit where he didn't know he was letting out.
Uh-huh.
And I had a powerful memory.
Mm-hmm.
And I could remember what he said, you know.
Sure.
And so each time that he'd come in, well, you know, I'd get a little bit more and a little bit more, and finally I knew about what he knew.
How did he learn all this about chestnuts?
Well, he sawed lumber, and he furnished the tannery bark,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that there. And
sure.
He was telling about where the worms bedded under the bark, you know, and sucked the bark as it went up. And he said the lava goes through the bark into the nuts and into apples and all that kind of stuff. It's spraying outside, don't do nothing but just what little enters a tree is all it does any good.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, you've got to get down at the ground and work on a tree.
Yeah.
Said every worm and bug and disease starts from the ground.
Uh-huh.
So then I started working on it from the ground on it.
Sure.
Instead of up in the tree.
Right.
So that's why I knew so much about the trees, was because he had let out a lot of it, and different ones.
Sure. Hey, by the way, how about shoes? Did all the people have shoes or not?
Most of them went barefooted.
Yeah.
Most of them went barefooted.
Yeah.
I have seen many of them that would have burlap bags tied around their feet if they had anywhere to go.
Yeah.
They, you know, just to keep stickers and rocks and all from bruising their feet and stuff like that. But I've seen the children many a time barefooted when it was snowing around.
Mm-hmm.
Go right on through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you know anything about their schooling?
My daughter taught school in there.
She did. Where did she teach?
She taught at Sandy Bottom. You know where Sandy Bottom
is? Yeah, near Elkton.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, she taught a one-room school up there for years. You'll have to see her. She can tell you a lot of stuff.
What's her name?
Ann Monahan.
Ann Monahan. Where does she live?
She lives right across in front of Bonanza in a permastone house as you go into Harrisonburg on the right-hand side.
Okay, what, do you know her telephone number?
434-4550. She teaches over Turner Ashby now.
She does, uh-huh.
She's taught over ever since she left there and went to Elkton when they closed the school up.
Mm-hmm.
But she could tell you a lot about those mountain people because she taught them.
Sure, right.
Right in the mountain, too.
Yeah. Great, haha. Now, the people you say were honest.
As far as I'm concerned.
That's right. You listened to my series on WSVA and you heard the statement that I made that I never knew. I always ask them, what kind of a lock did you have on your door? And they said,
I don't remember
ever having one.
I don't remember ever seeing a lock.
No.
Yes, I'll take it back. I seen some wooden locks that they had made. Yes, I seen those. Now, what it was a long bar went across, and it had a staple that went through it, and it made a wooden pin that was split like this, see?
Uh-huh.
And when that went down in there, it sprung apart, and you had to have a pliers to get it back up out of it.
Uh-huh.
No key.
Yeah, no key.
Now, I have seen those.
Yeah.
But mostly where they kept them, I don't know if they ever kept them on food or anything like that, but mostly when they begin to get in automobiles, you know, the first automobiles come out, you had to have a garage first.
Sure.
Or you didn't buy a car.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They never know them sitting them out. Mm-hmm. And mostly on cars or a buggy or something like that. There was a few buggies around through there.
Sure.
We call them buckboards.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of buggies.
Did the people work hard?
They was hardest working people you ever seen. They would get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and have their horses sticking their heads out the shed door by daylight.
Mm. So they all had horses?
And well, no, not all of them now, no, but the people that, you understand now, if I worked for one, like around the lumber, there was no case for me to have a horse. But if he was a lumber man, or drug logs for a living or something like that, he had a horse.
Sure.
Or two.
Yeah.
But not everybody had a horse, no.
Did they use the horses to pull the logs then into town or?
The way they did it was this. They load a load of bark for the tannery.
Mm-hmm.
And they used the tannin out of the bark to tan leather with.
Right.
And they would load the wagon up full, and they'd have steep mountains to come down, and they would tie logs behind it to hold the wagon back down the mountain.
Oh.
And then when they get down to the bottom part of the mountain, they'd leave whatever log, if they had three or four, they'd turn all of them loose except one, if they could drag one without too much energy. Then they'd leave that log off at some of their buddies for firewood along the road as they went into the tannery.
Oh. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Don't know whether they give it to them or whether they sold it or what.
Mm-hmm.
But their wagons were made only for mountain use.
Mm-hmm.
I got it in my book there. Their wagons was made heavy to hold that stuff. It's no good for long hauls.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they would generally bring this here. Now, the Elkton people, they would take it clear to the tannery.
Mm-hmm.
But you take people from around Waynesboro or Luray or stuff like that, they'd bring it out and park it along the road, stack it along the road, and then the tannery wagons would pick it up and take it on into the tannery.
Right.
It was too long a haul for their type wagon.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
And I've seen them haul watermelons out of them in the mountain, and they would haul them. They'd have some of the nicest watermelons. I loved those watermelons out of the mountain.
Really?
They was altogether different from ours.
Really?
And they'd have a car, and they'd take all the seats out of them in the back and fill it up. No trucks in.
Yeah.
And haul the watermelons out, and I bought some watermelons off of them, and I sold some for them.
Mm-hmm. The store that you were mentioning, did that have dry goods in it, like bolts?
Oh yes, it had everything.
Uh-huh.
Everything.
Yeah.
Shoes, dry goods, oil for lamps, and all the different things that might be needed. It was a general store, and I mean it, really a general store.
Sure.
You could get anything there that you wanted to. What he did was this. I've heard him say it a many times, that whenever a person called for it, they never call a second time.
Yeah.
He would buy either one of them or two of them and put them in the store.
Do you know if he gave them credit when they bring in produce, or did he give them cash?
I think that he'd give them scrip.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Most of the stores in that day had scrip.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, it's really like credit, because that scrip is only good in that store.
Well, they never need no credit. I'll tell you another thing. I never seen a check until about 1923 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
Never seen one until about that time. And the first check that I ever remember seeing, I seen a man write on a piece of flour poke where flour come in.
Uh-huh.
He tore a piece of bag up and wrote a check on that, and it took it right into the bank and paid it. It was to me.
Yeah. Would you mind reading this for the record of the park?
This is a record that that I wrote down, and I let the Sandor Heritage, which is Appalachian Trail, have, and they wrote an article on it. Before the blight, you could see the wagons loaded with logs, bark, and large bags of nuts, dragging logs along down the steep mountainside. They would then leave the logs off at some friend's house for firewood. Then they would continue on to the tannery. From there, they would sell the nuts to the country stores. The chestnut bark contained tannin, which was in great demand for curing leather. And after the chestnut trees died, they had to depend on chemical methods. In the spring, the mountain people would cut the trees or fall the trees, split the bark and peel it off for the tanneries. Sometimes they would stack it along the road to be picked up later by the tannery wagons, as the mountain wagons were not made for long hauls. Chestnut logs were in great demand for use as telephone poles and for railroad ties. The straight trunks and resistant to rot made the chestnut wood ideal for anything. Besides being a free for the cash crop, the chestnut played an important part in building homes, barns, longs with sheds for animals. It was easy to work with, and it was almost free of knots. Chestnut wood could be made into handles and wheels. It was lots of shingles and boards with virtually no knots holes at all. Every part of the tree was used for something. The nuts that fattened the razorback hogs also attacked the animals and the squirrels that were so tasty in stew. Limbs were long and straight and were used for long-lasting fence posts and rails. The twigs were put into gullies to keep the land from washing. The new spring growth, known as honeydew, was stored for winter cattle food. The blossom attracted the bees. The chestnut groves was often used for bee stands to mark the starting point of an expedition to locate the bee trees. The chestnut blight reached the Blue Ridge Mountain in the 20s. Within a few years, it wiped out the American chestnuts, and with it, a major source of livelihood for the mountain people. In 1928, chestnut skeletons were a common sight in the Blue Ridge. The trees that once stood 100 feet tall was used for knotty chestnut boards. There was no knotty chestnut board before the blight killed the trees. The worms eat the wood then instead of the sap. Their canals soon smothered them to death.
That is such a beautiful summary that I wanted, if you didn't mind, having that on our records.
The bee line. Now, I mentioned the bee line in there.
Yeah.
I've seen their stands that they made. Now, they would take a stand and build it up about 6 foot off the ground, high enough that a bear couldn't get the honey off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd either build it close to a chestnut tree or close to the house, one or the other. And they would put old last year's honey on top of it and wore it fast. And under it, they would put a pan of water. And the bees would, soon one would light on it. And in about a half an hour, there'd be 100 light on it. And then before the day was over, there'd be thousands of them lit on it. And then they would fly to a holler tree. Mm-hmm. And that was called the bee line. Uh-huh. You could look and see which way they flew. And that's the way they got their next year's honey. Every year they would get their yearly supply of honey from this bee stand.
You say bear, and yet there were not bears.
Oh, yes, there were bear too. Yes, sir. They said there wasn't bear. They might not have been plentiful.
There were bear?
They were bear. They were bear.
Bless your heart.
Now, I'll tell you why I know there was bear. My father, well, we used to haul slab wood from these places where they sawed the chestnut boards and stuff.
Yeah.
And one day we was coming out with a load of wood, and a bear went across the road, and he jumped up over a great big tall rock, and I said to the fella with me, I said, why did he go up over there? I said, when he could win just a little bit on each side, just went right on up the mountain. He said, that's the animal trail. And he said he knew every protection that he had all the way up the mountain. Mm-hmm. And they used the highest part of the mountain for body heat. They used the lowest part for the water. And all along this, they have a protection. And they never feed further away from this than what their breath would get them back in case of emergency. Uh-huh. And they'd go back to this here protection.
Right.
And his protection was up over there. Uh-huh. Now, when you think about this theory, why wouldn't they put signs all along the road, animal crossings?
Uh-huh.
That's an animal trail, wherever right. They put those signs up.
Right. Yeah.
And that's what these bears would do. Now, I've seen bears in the mountains back as far as 1912-13. Now, there wasn't many.
No, but there were some.
But they were bears.
Uh-huh. How about deer?
I don't believe I ever seen a deer.
Uh-huh.
But I've seen wildcats and stuff like that.
Sure.
Know? But we used to do a lot of night hunting, you know, uh-huh. for coons and
yeah.
stuff like that. But don't believe I ever seen a deer. But now when they say there wasn't no bears, they were bears.
Great, great, great. That's the first. You said you were with the CCCs, or did you
When
help?
The CCC camps moved in, I used to go up and repair their cars.
Oh.
The boys' cars, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
When they did something get wrong with them, I'd have to go up to repair the cars.
Yeah.
And the Forest Service, I made keys, and the Forest Service gave me a key to all the gates, one key for them all, so that I could recognize it in case somebody come in to have a key made.
Mm-hmm.
And I carried that key for years and years and years.
The CCCs, do you think that they were hardworking young men?
Yes, the boys obeyed them pretty well.
Yeah.
You see, money was so scarce then
that
was the only way that they had of making any money, and they figured that they could get kicked out just as easy as they got in.
Sure. Right.
And I had a little grocery store along with, at the same time, but I'm getting ahead of the story. I was in the mountain when the first equipment went in for the CCK.
You were?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I was, there when they brought the first equipment in to start on the mountain.
Then you could tell us, how was the reaction of the mountain people? Did they seem upset, or was it, were some of them happy, some of them sad?
You got me just a little bit on that.
Mm-hmm.
I heard a little bit backwards and forwards. But as far as to come right out and tell you, I just couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want to tell you.
Yeah. Some of them have shown utter longing for it, and yet they've said they wouldn't go back because the work was too hard.
The mountain people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, now, when they moved out, I helped to dig the wells for their homesteads.
Yeah.
I worked for a well driller. Now, the reason I worked for them was because in the wintertime, we didn't have much to do.
Mm-hmm.
In the shop, you know.
Yeah.
And we'd go out and get work. I went up on the Safe Harbor Dam and worked up there when they built that above the Conowingo Dam just below Columbia for a winter. And I went up to Pittsburgh one winter and worked up there. And we'd go away on winter.
Sure.
Bunch of us guys, you know.
Yeah.
And then we'd come back in the spring. We had plenty of work in the spring. So they drilled these wells in the wintertime, and I helped drill them.
Did you ever see Pollock? George Freeman Pollock? At Skyland.
No, I've heard a lot of him, but I never did see him, no.
You never went to any of his affairs?
No.
No. What were the teeth like of the mountain people?
The what?
Their teeth. Were they in any good condition or bad?
Their teeth? Most all of them used snuff. I don't know what I could tell you not. Even the men did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I was wondering if they... I don't think they had a dentist.
I don't know of any dentist. I know that they pull one another's teeth. I do know that.
Yeah.
Without, you know, going to any professionals or anything like that. Yeah, I do know that.
Yeah. Were the men clean shaven?
The younger people were. The olders were older ones.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of older ones that was clean shaven, too.
Did you ever go to any of their dances?
No. But I have been around as a bystander where they would have singing and stuff like that, you know.
Do you recall any of their tunes?
Shade of an Old Apple Tree.
Oh!
That was one. They mostly had songs of their own around these places.
Yeah.
You know, they most all of them had a banjo or something like that there as the youngsters, you know. They would play, I don't know of any other kind of music. But, oh, yes, they did. I think some of them had accordion.
Accordion?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, they were the wealthy.
They must have been pretty wealthy because I have seen a few of them around where they played. Yeah, I have seen them.
Now you've given me two first.
Huh?
Okay.
But the banjos were mostly the main music.
Yeah.
Jute harp. There's another thing you had.
Yeah. And fiddle.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Never seen as many fiddles as they did the banjos on.
Quite a number of
and,
them.
And I'll tell you another thing they used to use. It's gallon jugs to make their music with, you know. Boom, 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 you know, like that.
Oh, really?
For the background, yeah. Yeah, I've seen them use it many times. Uh-huh. Did you ever hear one of them?
No.
Oh, they make a dandy background.
Of course they would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had a way of blowing like you would a whistle or something. That was another thing they used to make a lot of, is whistles. They'd take a limb and cut it off and remove the bark, and burn, you know,
yeah.
Clip it right out. And then they'd cut a little notch in the top and plug the end of it up and put a little piece in the front, and that was their signal whistle. They used that for signals.
Signals for what?
Oh, if they wanted to call attention to somebody way off. You know, a lot of people would put their fingers in their mouth
sure.
And whistle, see? But you mostly use those whistles for signal people.
Uh-huh.
You ever see one of those?
Yes, I've seen them, but that's a great idea. In other words, to call a neighbor about a quarter of a mile away.
Right, just as, wherever they, you know, the sound would carry so much better from them than it would you.
Yeah.
And another thing that I can tell you that, is very peculiar. There's not a lot of people didn't know. They always thought cowbells was to find a cow.
Yeah.
But a cowbell was not to find a cow. It was made to run snakes away. A snake can't stand vibration.
Yeah.
Now my mother told me this. She used to pick a lot of berries in the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And she always carried a big pan on the back of her back when she went to the mountain besides her bucket. And she'd bang on this old pan for a while, and then she'd start picking berries. And I said to her, I said, Mom, what'd you do that for? You know, boy, you have to hold your finger in your ears when you do it. She said, to run the snakes away. She said, that's why your daddy's got bells on cows. And I said, yeah, it is. She said, yeah. She said, while they're eating, the snakes can't stand the vibration, and they don't stop eating. And the cow does better. I said, well, why don't he put them on horses? She said, a horse can smell a snake 15 feet away. He don't need no bell on it. And you never heard of a horse having a cowbell on it.
Yeah. Hey, pretty great.
So that's why the cowbell was invented, was on account of running the snakes away.
Yeah.
You see, if a cow's eating, he's always ringing his bell.
Right.
And a snake can't stand vibration. A lot of the mountain people used bells in their yard for that. They didn't ring in bells for dinner. Of course, they used them for dinner bells, too. But they used them to keep the snakes away from the house.
Hmm.
Just numbers of them did. I've had numbers of them tell me.
Uh-huh.
Don't it sound logical to you?
Sure does. Did they let their cattle roam free?
Yes.
Ruined them for a lot of trees, didn't it, doing that?
No, the cattle mostly kept down the bridge, and the trees done better,
uh-huh.
If I'm rolling out.
Yeah.
But laws, they'd have to start hunting by 3 o'clock in the evening for to get them for dark, you know.
Yeah.
They'd be wandering so far away.
How about hogs? Did they let them run free?
No, they would generally have maybe a little rail fence or something put up for them, generally. There wasn't too many people raised hogs, there was plenty of wild ones. They could just get them old razorbacks and most of them died. They were so poor. They were so poor you'd have to eat the skin and bone.
never forget one time, they were two run us up a chestnut tree. And they kept us up there for a couple of hours, too.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they'd eat us up if we'd have been trying.
They're
vicious. Oh, yeah. Yes, indeed. But it's a funny thing, we used to always, when we go to the mountain, to get chestnuts and carry a bag of corn along, you know.
Uh-huh.
And one boy would feed the hogs away, while the others would get them, if, you know, if they're around.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, we'd feed them away. The oldest boy, mostly always, it was three of us generally go, and he would feed them away, and they'll dig all the ground up around the tree, you know, if it's a nut there.
Yeah.
They love them.
Yeah, right.
And he would carry this corn along and feed them away.
Yeah.
And one boy would check the trees, a chestnut tree is a funny tree. They don't have no limbs until you get up to 15, 20 feet.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it made such good lumber, you know.
Sure.
And my brother used to take the hay fork rope off where they pull hay in the barn, you know. And he'd take his shoe off and he'd throw it up across the limb. And then the others would pull him up to shake the tree.
Oh.
No way of getting up in it, for it'd be about 8 foot across.
Sure. Yeah.
And the limbs would be so high.
Yeah.
And he'd go up a tree and be 75 feet tall. Boys, when he'd shake the tree, you better get out from underneath of it, for he would kill you.
Yeah.
The ground would be covered.
Yeah.
I've seen many a time with you. And I used to ride the school bus. We had 3 miles to go to school. And I lived inside the boundary that you're supposed to walk. Outside of there, the school bus picked them up. I used to hide along the road, you know, and get behind a cedar tree. And when the school wagon, you know,
yeah,
over horses, you know, I'd get behind this cedar tree and hide. And when the horses come, well, the kids would make a right for us. I hadn't made up with them, you know, and then I'd slip on the wagon and ride to school. But he would let me ride only just once in a while. He'd have a fit, you know, and put you off or something like that.
Yeah.
But along the road, it would be chestnut trees right beside the road. And us boys would jump off and run ahead, you know, and get our pockets full until the wagon got to us.
Mm-hmm.
And I never will forget, just before he got into town, there was a great big chestnut tree. And it was right side of the road, and the road would be covered.
Mm.
Well, we'd gather them, and then when we got to school, we'd divide them.
Mm.
Children back in those days, they looked out after one another. Mm. It's as much different now as then. As day and night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I had lost my pencil, they seen I had a pencil.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. If one had anything, they'd divide with the other. If one would bring lunch and they didn't want so much of a thing, they'd pass that down and want to know what any of the others would want. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that, you know.
Sure.
But.
And I imagine it was the same way with the children that were in the mountains, too, wasn't it?
I imagine it was.
Yeah. Hmm. Did you ever see them playing with any toys?
The wood ones. The most they had that I have seen was nearly all of them had was, they call it a joystick. And it had looked like a seat on it, and it would put between their legs and drag it and walk.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever seen any of them or not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they mostly all of them, kids would have something like that.
Did they play marbles?
Oh, yes. That was a great game. The marble games died about 1930.
Mm-hmm.
Before then, they would gather in gangs and be dozens of them playing marbles.
Yeah.
I've seen them many a marble game.
How about pitching horseshoes?
Yes, that was another good game. But did you know, back in those days, these blacksmith shops, they had occasion to use the old horseshoes.
Uh-huh.
And it's right hard to get them.
I've heard that some of them, when they didn't have horseshoes, pitched rocks.
I don't believe I've ever seen them pitch rocks, but I've seen them pitch wood.
Yeah.
Pitch wood. Take a prong piece of wood, you know.
Sure.
It was cut off about 1 inch below the prong and about 2 inches, maybe a little further on the top.
Uh-huh.
And they would pitch at. I've seen them, any one of them.
Yeah.
It worked quite as good as a horseshoe.
Sure. How about firecrackers at Christmas?
Never seen a firecracker in the whole mountain. Or nothing.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell you what we used for, what they used for trains, or toys, mostly. They'd get sorting boxes, and when they pull the top off, they tie them together, and the small kids would drag them around to the store. I did that myself. That was our toy then.
Yeah.
And my first tricycle, my brothers had a blacksmith shop, and they built these little express wagons. And my job was to sand them up. We didn't have no sandpaper, we used glass to sand them up. And my brother made me a tricycle, just like the tricycles were made, but he didn't make it so that you guide it.
Oh.
He said, you don't have to guide it, you got a straight place to go. But it was awful hard to ride without upset.
Of course. Hey, by the way, fire. Speaking of firecrackers, made me think, fire.
They would all set fires because wherever there was a fire, boy, there was a tremendous crop of huckleberries.
Right. Uh-huh.
They nearly all set fires.
Yeah, right. Do you know if, you know, we have a lot of pictures up at park headquarters of the houses, they all had a ladder up against the roof. Do you suppose that was because they were afraid of fires in the house and the chimney?
No, that was for lazy people. They wouldn't cut the wood up and go up and stick it down the chimney. They'd burn it up and beat itself down. There's numbers of them done that.
Go through that again. What was it that they do?
They're fireplaces.
Yeah.
They wouldn't cut the wood short, you know.
Yeah.
They cut about 8 feet long. And then go on top of the house and stick it down through the chimney and let it burn and beat itself down. And it would keep a fire all night long. That's what most of them ladders is up against them houses for. You never heard of that?
I've never heard of that.
Yes, indeed. There were just numbers of people who did that. You know what I mean now, don't you?
Yes, only then how did the... I thought you needed an open chimney.
Well, the chimney was open up top, you know, where the fireplace went up through the house.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And they just go up and stick the thing down from the top. If you notice, a lot of those houses, they were built along the edge of a steep mountain.
Yeah.
And they'd have a platform if you just go out and stick them down through.
All big time.
Yes, you've seen that done many a time.
You know,
there were two things that those ladders were used for. They didn't have no inside stairway to the second story, wherever the house had a second story, and they went up on the outside. They generally have a little porch around and a door, and you go up from outside. And you use a ladder to go up there and to stick these logs down to the fireplace.
What's the light tell them at the park? This is fun. What else can you think of that I haven't asked? I've been doing all the questioning, and you're the one that has the memory. When you were asked to go somewhere, did you ever say, oh gosh, I don't want to go to that area?
No, no. Because money was so scarce then that we was willing to go anywhere to get a few dollars or something.
Did you ever hear any of them say where they came from?
No, but I tell you what, I've heard many of them say that they couldn't ride an automobile. It'd make them sick every time if they never had rode an automobile, you know.
Yeah.
And you could go in the different ones, they moved out, and I'd go back into their home place with them or something like that, you know. And their parents wouldn't even get in an automobile because it said it'd make them sick every time. You know, in olden days, people used to always get sick in automobiles. But I remember back in 1916, I believe it was, my daddy bought an old one.
Oh, yeah.
And nearly every trip we went, he'd twist an axle off. There was no trouble to put an axle in. He had a little round of wire, go up and pull it out, you know, and stick it in. He always carried 5 or 6 axles in his car. With him.
Yeah.
And that's where I learned mechanic trade most of the time. You know, he's working to help him. But my daddy was a veterinarian, and I used to have to go around with him to vaccinate hogs, and I drove most of the farm. That's in the latter part of him. He died in 1924. Mm. I was born in 1909. But the first automobile that I ever drove, my brother got married in 1914. That makes me 5 years old. So he went to Stanley to get on a train going on his honeymoon, and he said to me, he said, take it back and play it in the barn. Never even let me drive it back to Stanley. And coming back, I knocked down the mailbox. And when I got home and pulled up in the yard, the first thing my daddy said, my gracious, that you could have killed 50 people. He got awful mad over that.
Yeah.
Model T.
You were too young to drive.
Well, it wouldn't have been so bad if he had taught me, you know. But I've been a driving ever since then.
Hey, by the way, were the people clean?
No, not no more than usual for a regular farmer, old farmer, you know. They was some of them right clean. Some of them come out dressed up pretty nice. In other words, mostly when they would come out, they would change to cleaner clothes, yeah. But same working clothes.
Yeah.
I don't believe ever any would come out dressed up.
No. But they always talked to me about their laundry, and it sounds as though they worked pretty hard to try and keep their clothes clean anyway.
Well, now they washed their, mostly washed in the creek.
Yeah.
And they'd hang their clothes on limbs and stuff like that, you know, around close by.
Sure.
Seen that a many a time, yeah.
Yeah.
They did a right smart washing, but they had to do a right smart washing.
Yeah. Did you ever see any in there that, because of being closely bred, they weren't quite right?
Oh, yes.
Either
yes.
Physically or mentally.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I've seen one woman that had 3 affected children. And I've seen numbers of others. We call them simple. We
yeah.
call them afflicted.
Mm-hmm.
But we always treat them all with respect, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of those children in the mountain there, they, if they would have had the schooling and out among the public, they would make great people.
Mm-hmm.
They had the potential spark, you know, the good memory and the alertness and all that kind of stuff. You know.
Do you recall any of their expressions?
Well, doggone was one thing that most all of them used. There's very few of them ever cursed. I don't believe I heard but very few unless they got awful mad or something like that. They most all had a byword of some kind. But doggone was the biggest word that they used.
Well, what did they refer to, like what you're sitting on? How was that word pronounced?
What, a chair you mean? Mostly a stool or a settee or something like that.
What I'm trying to find out is, I've heard people say that there were a lot of old English expressions, Elizabethan terms, really. And now nobody can recall what they were.
Well, there was a lot of them. It spoke what you might say their own language. They could communicate with one another where you and I couldn't.
Yeah.
Give you an example. Eat that gutty rug. How she fuck up on
that night. What was that again? Say it again.
Eat that gutty rug. How she fuck up on that night.
What does that mean?
My name.
How come?
I'd have to show you. We used different things like that there, basically when we was writing to girls and we didn't want their parents to know nothing about it.
Oh.
A lot of them would call it pig Latin.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And each one of us knew what each thing meant.
Mm-hmm.
Now they used a lot of that.
Yeah. Did they write and spell and everything?
No, they were very poor speakers and not much on spelling. Not very little writing. A lot of them couldn't even write at all. And occasion, there was no checks to write. There was no taxes to fill out. There was nothing. There was no occasion for them to write.
Well, how did they get the news? How did they find out what was going on in the outside world? They couldn't buy it. If they couldn't read, why did they buy a paper?
No, I don't think there's a very few of them in there ever saw a paper.
Then how would they know about that they went to World War One?
Well, now you understand these boys and all would go out to town and probably get a whole week of news.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
Sure.
Because I know a lot of times I'd go in there and they'd ask me different things about different things. I'd tell them different things, you know. And you have to be very careful about telling them anything at all. Because, you see, whenever you tell a person a thing, they can't repeat it just act like you can. They always add a little or take a little bit away.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing is done wound up to a tail.
Yeah. So you have to tell the minimum so they can elaborate.
Yeah, it's just like one time it was a fuller lived right close to where I lived, and they always thought called him the biggest lawyer in the country. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he wasn't a lawyer. He was an entertainer. Uh-huh. And there's a whole lot of difference between a lawyer and an entertainer.
Sure.
So one day a man said to him, said, "Hey, John, come in here," and "tell me one." Snow on the ground about 6 or 8 inches deep, and so he walked up there and he said, "I don't have much time," he said, "John just died and I'm trying to find somebody to lay him out." And I said, "Would you help?" He said, "Yeah." So John went on and got ready and went over to this man's house where he thought was dead, and he was alive. And so this man was going on. So he really told him what.
Well, that was apparently their one way of entertainment, wasn't it?
That was their entertainment. They would pull jokes, stuff like that. Now, I'll tell you another thing. I don't know if I ever heard of one of them ever pulling dirty jokes like on you, know, like, you know, like kids do now.
Yeah.
Mark glass up or break glass or stuff like that. If it's a joke, it was something, you know, that would they take a laugh about.
Sure. Right. I guess they did play practical jokes, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, they played among themselves. But they was right funny about this now. If you couldn't take a joke, they wouldn't pull no jokes. Mm. If you could take a joke, then they would pull them. And they had a way of feeling around you, you know, to see whether you could take a joke.
Okay, give us an example of a practical joke that they would play.
Well, they would... coming right on off, I couldn't give one right out, but usually they would have different jokes about different things, you know, and among themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Let me show you when we get done.
When we're done.
But not now.
All right. Well, you know, I've had your shop closed for an hour, and I feel very guilty.
I don't mind. I just need to get your money to anybody else.
I'm not paying anything.
Oh, you're not? Well, now, a man went into the lawyer's office and he said his in-law against hanging clothes on another person's clothes line. Oh, he said, "You've got a good case. Your neighbors, you know, side to side." He said, "All right, pay me." He said, "Your wife hung clothes on my line." He said, "You know I'm a bachelor." And he said, "I can't stand what they said." So he was right mad about it. So the lawyer said to him, he said, "John, we've been good friends all of our life." He said, "Let's compromise." He said, "All right," said, "you give me $15 and promise me she'll never hang no clothes on my line no more. I'll compromise with you." So the lawyer gave him $15. Next day he got a letter in the mail, $15 legal advice.
I know you are. It really does seem a shame to just take and not be able to give anything back. But do know this, that you're helping the people from the...
Yes, I know. Everybody knows me.
Yeah.
I happened to be in a place the other day, and I was talking to a feller, and I noticed the feller standing off a little ways, and he kept watching me. And so somehow or another, this feller called my name. Where I was talking to him, when I went out, he said to me, he said, "Excuse me," he said, "are you Huffman?"
I said, yeah. He said, are you the Chestnut Huffman? I said, yeah. He said, I'm from South Dakota, and said, you are well known out there.
Okay. Say, by the way, I know the payment I will give you. I will give you. Now, what were you saying about the limbs?
All right, this is a page on Green Thumb. All trees have long limbs on the east.
Uh-huh.
They have a flat side on the west. That's nature's way of keeping a person from getting lost in the woods. Another thing it was used for, back in olden days when they blazed the trails through the mountains and the roads, they used the limbs on the trees to go by.
Right.
Because the monsoon rain lasted too long and they couldn't use the stars and the sun and stuff like that. Now you can paint imaginary eye and you can't find a road that wasn't north and south and east and west.
Mm-hmm.
It was over 100 years old.
Right.
And not only that, but they used them for graveyards, for starting a graveyard. All graves are facing either east or west.
Mm-hmm.
And they used that to, because they had no compasses,
mm-hmm.
or nothing to go by.
Yeah.
So they used these here limbs to go by.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you take a tree up, the magnetic pole forms in a tree after, I'd like to read this.
Yeah, go ahead.
It has been said that some people have green thumbs. What does this term mean? It means that those people have a certain touch with plants and trees. They all seem to grow faster and healthier for people with green thumbs. This does not happen by mere chance. These people probably know more about plants than the average person would. People with green thumbs probably know about the magnetic pole which controls their growth.
Mm.
You have the same thing in you, but you call it static electricity.
Mm.
It controls your growth. We learned this by building new automobile batteries. If you turn a battery around in your car, you know what it'll do.
Yeah.
If you turn a tree around, you know what it'll do with it. All trees have magnetic pole. If a tree is transplanted with its east side facing west, north side facing south, then the growth of the tree will be stunted. I have experimented with this when planting trees or vegetable plants. I can set two plants side by side, water and care for them exactly the same. One will grow very fast and the other very slow. This happens because one has been planted with its magnetic pole facing the wrong way. So I found that the best thing to do is to mark the east side of a tree that is to be transplanted before it is moved. The easiest way to do this is to watch and see which side the sun comes up on.
Mm-hmm.
And mark the tree with a cloth or a string. When reset, the east side should be facing east if you move it 100 miles,
mm-hmm.
or a mile,
mm-hmm.
or a foot. If a tree is not transplanted in this way, it will take many years to change its magnetic pole.
Yeah.
Change your battery around and see what it'll do.
Sure.
In 1923, a walnut tree was planted on a fence road just east of the Shenandoah River Dam. My father told me that this tree was being set exactly opposite from the way it should be set. If it would have been set with its magnetic pole facing the right direction, in 50 years it would have been 60 or 70 feet tall. But now it will never reach a height of 35 feet because it takes a walnut tree 20 years to change its magnetic pole. The magnetic pole forms after the seed or nut rots off. We like to transplant our chestnut trees before the nut rots off. We plant them in half-gallon milk cartons. That way, they're already growing and you don't have to worry about which way you set them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As long as the roots is contained with dirt. Plants or trees does better if planted before the third leaf rots forms.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to plant a little tree, don't try to get a great big one. Get a little one.
Yeah.
The magnetic pole in people is called static electricity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that is absolutely fascinating. Beautiful. Well, I thank you more than you can say. No.